The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, November 19th, the My Child is Obsessed with a Squash edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry 8, Oliver 6, and Teddy 4, and I'm located in Navarre, Florida.
I'm Jamil Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and host of Slate's The Kids Are Asleep Late Night Chat show, and mom to Naima, who is 7, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
And Dan is out this week taking care of one of his children, so it's the girls-only mom's edition, and hopefully we won't run too wild. But today on the show, we've got a question from a mom about her child's infatuation with body types. We'll also be answering a question about a parent's concern for their child who has found comfort in a fruit. As always, we have triumphs, fails, and recommendations. So Jamila, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I have once again something that has not yet been categorized, but it is a we shall soon see. You can't tell because for some reason, despite the fact that I bought my computer this summer, like literally computer, whenever the summer Mercury retrograde was, my old computer died. I had to buy a new one like the next day, and the screen looks like I'm talking on a Razer phone, so you can't quite see my hair. But last night, after a little bit of marijuana and some reading and just kind of doing my late night, trying to get my life together, I'm sorting out the house, I'm trying to do productive things moment, I look at my hair and I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I had my hair right before the pandemic officially hit the U.S. I got my hair done for the last time. I got it bleached. I got some highlights or whatever, kind of like deep, like they kind of like half. I don't even know what to call it. I'm so not a hairdresser girl. Like I wish I was. In my head I am, but I'm not. But like where you kind of like bleach half your hair and like leave your roots dark. So not quite ombre, but like he gave me some color to like my, and he gave me a trim. So my hair was still kind of short. And so the stylist gave me some color to play with. So it was bleached. So I was, you know, I've been blue, I've been purple, have been rose gold and a bunch of different colors, and of course the bleached hair. But I'm also growing my hair out because I want to grow my hair long again because I've been wearing it short for a few years now. Obviously the bleached hair is the least healthy hair, which is why it was cool that he had left me a lot of dark hair, you know, new growth or whatever. And so my last color, I'd done a dark blue and then I put a black over it to try and go like fully black, and it just turned into something weird. Like it's fine in most lights. I just look like I have dark hair. But like I went to the store the other day and this boy was trying to like sell, you know, the kids who are like selling raffle tickets or you know, excuse me, not selling anything. They're soliciting donations for their basketball team. And it's right. Like, okay, I don't know that the basketball team exists. And I'm partially skeptical about this because I caught some kids doing this for a team that I knew would not have them out there soliciting donations. But anyway, as someone who usually gives people on the street my money whenever they ask, I said no. And when I was walking away, one of his friends was like, is your hair purple or something? And I was like, oh, shit. You know what? Okay. Like, I'm sitting here thinking I'm looking like a hot girl. And some teenagers described my hair as purple or something. And so, obviously, this isn't right. And so, last night, I looked at the blue part. And I was like, you have to go. And so, I just cut the bleached part of my hair out. I gave myself a haircut. So it like, well, one, you can't really see it because of my crappy camera. And I have conditioner in it, so it's like curled up tighter. But I like cut my hair off. So was that a triumph or a fail? We don't know. I guess we
can say. How do you feel that it went? Like, do you feel good about it?
It does not look as bad as it could have. This isn't the first time I've done it. And I did have, you know, even though I was completely sloppy and I hadn't completely combed my hair all the way out. And I was just totally like, I'm just looking for blue parts. And then, like, when I was done, I kind of looked in and I was like, okay, I see where it's a little uneven. Let me go back and try and fix that up. I could have looked at a YouTube video. I thought about this for a few days. I was like, you know, you could, like, go on YouTube and find a video on, like, how to trim your split in. I thought, maybe I'll just trim a little bit at a time. And then, no, last night I was just like, just cut off all the bad part. So I feel like it could have been worse. The good thing is that my hair is short enough for hats, scarves, and wigs to be worn very easily. So even if it does look crazy, I am protected in that way. And people don't usually see me anymore unless it's on Zoom. So
yeah, I was going to say it, but Naima's not here to give you some kind. We can't receive a Naima judgment.
So she is here, actually. She's not usually here on Tuesday mornings, but she has a dentist appointment today. So we switched it up. So when I woke up this morning, when she woke up this morning, I said, hey, look, you know, notice anything different? She's like, you cut your hair. I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, okay. And that was pretty much it. So,
okay. I think that's, I mean, I feel like, don't you feel like if it were terrible, Naima would say something?
That is true. Her dad also went completely bald and he'd had dreadlocks for a few years and he cut all his hair off last week. So I think that I think my hair looks like something she's seen before.
Yeah,
like she's
yeah.
seen me with this haircut, like yeah. a professional version of it. But she's seen me with short hair. Like, I think she's more traumatized and kind of like grappling with that because it's so drastic that I managed to kind of skate by. Like, it'll be a few months before she realizes, like, mommy, that's really uneven, you know, like,
yeah.
probably could have done a better job with that. But I did my absolute best. I guess the triumph is that it kept me from heeding the temptation to go get my hair cut, you know, because
yeah.
I know that everything is like, things are getting bad in California. I feel like another shutdown is imminent. Like, businesses are starting to close again. And so I had a moment of like, well, you're going to be in the house for a while. Just get your hair cut, you know, like
yeah.
you'll feel better. You'll, you know, get a haircut. And I was like, no, like the hair, I'm not going to the hairdresser. Like, I've allowed myself a few other, you know, indulgences. Like, I've been going to the doctor again. Not that that's an indulgence, but you know what I mean? Like, going to a dermatologist
yeah.
and things that maybe I could have put off. Like, you're not going to use that card for a haircut. So here we are.
Well, I like you said, I wish I could see it better and reassure you, but it looks fine from the grainy the image. I noticed no difference until you started talking about it. So I think you're right, a triumph that you just like took care of it for sure.
And I hope so. What about you, Elizabeth? Do you have a
triumph? So I have a fail, but it's not hair related, but of a similar note. We have been like trying to really minimize, you know, doctor's visits and things like that. But Oliver has something weird going on with his foot and we basically just couldn't avoid it. So we had an appointment yesterday to take him in to get it looked at. And our doctor's office is not very far from us. And the doctor is so great. But as a result of her being so great, she runs like hours behind. So we have like worked out a little system because we're so close and because I have three children. So like pre-pandemic, we were there a lot. Like the boys hurt themselves, do things that we just like call. And then she tells us like how late, you know, the Heather who works up front tells us how late she's running. And then we just like pop over when our like room would be ready. So we did that yesterday and about 4 o'clock. We popped over there. And they saw us right into our room. And I had said to Oliver, like, Oliver, please just let's try not to touch anything. This is like really quick. We knew we needed a referral for his foot, but he needs to like have her look at it to give us the referral. So we go over there. I'm like, please, please, please don't touch anything. They put us in this room. He's like really great sitting. You know, he's sitting so nicely in the chair. And we're like sitting and we do the eye chart on the back, like just to play around. We end up sitting there for like an hour and I'm like begging him not to touch anything. And he just eventually crawls up onto the table that like has the one piece of paper and just like lays face down and he has his like doll. Okay, actually I'm gonna text you a picture here of it.
Please
but
do.
He just like makes himself cozy and I just was like, gross. We're gonna have to burn everything he has on.
My gosh.
I am not like a germaphobe, but it just seems to me like the doctor's office is the place in which, you know, like we have to go and we're wearing masks, but the less time we can be in there and the windows don't
the
open, just all
yeah.
these things, you know?
I understand. That's pretty funny. I have, I'll send you a picture of Naima had her 7-year-old checkup. Naima's 7 and a half, but she had her 7-year-old checkup this weekend. And we also had to get cozy in the doctor's office, but she was a little bit less comfortable. She didn't lay out. They changed the paper. I also have started I carry like a pocket disinfectant spray that I bought at some store thinking it was hand sanitizer. And then one day I was like, I've been spraying my hands with hand sanitizer, but now like I spray it where like I had to go to the doctor the other day and I sprayed the chair, you know.
That's
like,
so smart. Yeah, I mean,
everywhere.
I had all the like, you know, the like hand wipes and things like that. But yes, a disinfectant would have made things much, much better. I know the paper and they move the paper, but it seems
yeah.
like the paper
and I'm
doesn't
sure
cover
they sprayed. I know.
The whole table. I know they clean it, but just the like
He looks so content, though. He's like, finally, here I am, getting some rest, something comfortable for me to lay my burdens down on.
And if I had to be in an office with only one of the kids for an hour, and I brought nothing to do because I thought we would just walk in and get checked, Oliver would be who I picked. So he just kind of like laid there and we chatted and it was lovely and eventually got our referral and left, you know, so that we can go lay in other doctor's offices.
Right. So we can go do this again. Do you take pictures? Like, I may have three kids, so you probably don't, but like, I still take pictures of Naima, like every time we go to the doctor, just kind of out of habit. It's, I think part of it is like, she's also going to the same even though it's not the same doctor. In fact, we never had one doctor, and I'm terrible. I'm so bad at names. I think I realized something about myself. I'm bad at my names because I don't try to remember them. I hear them and I just say, okay. And then like, I forget. I have to like take a step and like repeat it to myself or something. But anyway, so I never remembered the doctor's names. We saw different doctors, but it was like one, I guess it's like a, I don't know what to call it. Like, it's like a chain. She goes to Tribeca Pediatrics, whatever. Like every, you know, bougie kid in New York. She went to Tribeca Pediatrics and they have them in like every neighborhood. And they have one in LA. So the rooms look similar. So it's also kind of like cool that even though it's a different place and we would sometimes be in Manhattan, sometimes be in Brooklyn, like that it just kind of looked like, you know, tracking her little life through these doctor's visit pictures.
I do still. I'm the same way. I take pictures. I like when they like come up, like, you know, on the memories or when Google Photos reminds me. I also find it's good when, you know, people will say, like, if I'm filling out paperwork and it's like, when's the last time you took this kid to the doctor? I'm like, dear Google Photos, when was I last at the doctor? Because I don't know. There's too many of them.
I'm like, one of you
broke your arm. Like, who broke their arm? Let's just look at Google Photos.
That's exactly the only way I remember when we went to the doctor, by the way.
All right, before we move on, it's time to do the business. In Slate Plus, Jamila and I are reflecting on two new studies that were released showing how the pandemic is making mothers more frustrated with their kids and partners. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
There are those moments where, you know, we're really proud of ourselves. Like, hey, I made a great breakfast, you know, while being on a conference call, or I helped my kids solve this complicated problem and, you know, got right back to work and everything was fine. But there are these other times where your kid is looking for attention and affirmation from you that you're either struggling to provide or can't provide because you're attempting to work from home, you know, or otherwise figuring out a way to support your family and take care of you guys through this thing.
To hear segments like that and get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. It's just $35 for your first year. It's a great way to support all of your favorite Slate podcasts, and you won't hit a paywall on the site, so you can keep up with all of Slate's journalism. So if you'd like to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. If you haven't yet watched Jamila's Slate live show, The Kids Are Asleep, you are really missing out. We are streaming on Thursdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Tonight, she'll be talking with Unique Jones Gibson of Because of Them, We Can, about how families can make the most of Thanksgiving from a distance. We'll have the links to Slate's YouTube and Facebook pages in our show notes, or check out slate.com/live. Keep up with all of Slate's parenting content by signing up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It's the best place to get notified about everything, including Mom and Dad Are Fighting, The Kids Are Asleep, Ask a Teacher, Care and Feeding, and much more. Plus, it's just a fun personal email from Dan each week. So if you missed him this week, go sign up at slate.com parenting email and never miss another email from him. Want even more parenting advice? Join our parenting group on Facebook. It's super active. We also moderate it so it doesn't get too out of control. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook and make sure you answer those questions.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
All right, on to our first listener question. It's being read, as always, by the fabulous Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad are fighting. My six-year-old daughter is on a kick lately about bodies that are fat or skinny. I'm fat. I have been my whole life. I don't mind her calling me fat, but I don't want her walking around openly commenting on people's bodies. We've had several talks where I've said, some people think the word fat is mean, so you can use it around me, but please don't use it around other people. And bodies come in all different shapes and sizes, and all of them are okay. And it's not kind to comment on other people's bodies, so please don't do that. We've also had a conversation where she told me, I don't want to be a fat grown-up. And when I asked why, she said, because then I won't be able to ride the zip line. For context, there's a zip line at our local playground that she wanted me to ride, and I declined because I wasn't sure what the weight limit was. But apparently her dad, who weighs less than me, but not by much, has ridden it. So now he's skinny while I'm fat. Any other messaging I should be offering? Any books we should be reading about differing bodies? Did I fuck this up and do this to myself by openly referring to myself as fat? How can I remedy this? Thanks. Fat Mom.
This is a topic I've been, I don't want to say, I guess on some level, not avoiding, grappling with in a really complicated way in my own life. So I have a history of eating disorders dating back till like when I was around middle school age, specifically bulimia, touch of binge eating, which the two usually go hand in hand, obviously, and some body dysmorphia. And so I realized for the first time the other day, I'm so afraid of my daughter having my own loathing of my body. You know what I mean? Hating her, but having the relationship to her body, no matter what it looks like, that I have or that I've had over the years, that it kind of leaves you, a lot of us, unclear as to how to have these conversations with our children, right? And so I understand why the letter writer chose to say, I'm fat, it's cool for you to call me that, like it's whatever, it's just a word that describes, you know, my body, it's not a commentary on my personhood or the value or the beauty of my body. It's just a statement of being. But I think you're kind of at that. And I know my thoughts are and personal stuff is a little bit just kind of jumbled into what I'm thinking about your story right now, letter writer. But I guess I'm kind of stuck, or I should say, what comes to mind first, aside from just kind of triggering that, like food, you know, body, trauma, all that stuff. There's a world we want to have, and there's the world we do have. And when we're trying to, raise children that are better than the kids we grew up with, right? Better than the bullies, better than we are ourselves. Sometimes it can be very hard between saying it should be totally fine to call someone fat or skinny, you know, because those should not be value judgments, you know, or condemnations. And they shouldn't be loaded words. It's just, you know, could ostensibly just be terms that describe a body type. But I think that knowing that there is a value that is assigned to most often, you know, more often fat, you know, skinny is not always a compliment or a positive attribute in the eyes of many people, but it certainly is not as loathed as being fat is in our society. I think that that context, which you have provided, is important and is something that you're going to have to constantly engage with. But you don't want your child not wanting to be fat because people think it's bad to be fat or because there's a rod that they, you know, then think that they're going to be able to ride. You want your child to, I would imagine, love their body and treat it well no matter what it looks or feels like. And part of modeling treating it well is to treat your body well. And so I wonder, when you refer to your body as fat, is it, I'm fat and I love it and it's great, or I'm fat and it's no big deal, or is it, I'm fat and there's no real editorializing on that, that's just kind of leaving this gap for your child to kind of, you know, p- pick out these negative things, like either nasty things that they've heard people say, or the very, you know, it totally would make sense. I want to ride this ride. If weight is going to be a barrier, then I don't want to be the weight that would, you know, prevent me from riding this ride. I think that there's something more that you need to be giving your child when it comes to how you talk about bodies, you know? And so it's not just saying I'm fat and it's fine to be fat. It's, do you have pictures of fat bodies hanging up in your house? You know, and not just your own body. Do you have pictures from magazines, right? Do you, you know, point out people on television who look like you and appreciate that they look like you and you know, and point out people who don't look like you or who look like your child? Like, what is this celebration of, like, not being anti-fat is not being body positive. And I think that in your noble attempts at making sure that you, you know, that or at making fat okay, I don't think you've affirmed fat, you know, I don't think you've made it beautiful. And that's something I think that needs to happen as part of a celebration of just bodies in general. Like, so that we say all bodies are beautiful. It's not hypothetical. It's not just, you know, my body is beautiful in spite of being fat. It's, you know, here's what I like about myself. And, you know, here, I like to wear this. I like the way that, you know, this makes me feel. And if, you know, I'm also not going to assume that your relationship to your body is a happy one just because you're like, I'm fat, I've always been fat, it's fine. But I think that in order to have a happy, healthy, a child with a happy, healthy body relationship, you want to model that. So whatever that looks like for you, I would suggest leaning into that a bit more. And also, you know, encouraging your child to be mindful about food and fitness, because those are important things that people of all body types must do. You know, like, I think showing videos or images of Lizzo, who can, you know, who's like an athlete in terms of what she does on stage, like playing an instrument and dancing and singing live, you know, the fat bodies can do a lot of things. And maybe you should find out for sure. You could have been wrong. If your husband was able to ride this ride and you all are close in weight, it sounds like there's a good chance that maybe you were also able to ride it. And then why didn't you want to find out? You know, like, if you've talked to your child about your size and have wanted to say, hey, it's just no big deal, but don't call other people that because it can hurt their feelings. Why didn't you find out? It was just a matter of, I don't feel like having to deal with what comes of that. Was it, you know, feeling uncomfortable with the possibility of being told that you can't ride the ride? But I think that also in making sure that you're giving this good, loving, affirming message, that you do talk about the way that the world outside treats bodies and why that is and where that comes from. And that it's not just a matter of fat and skinny, that there's a European beauty standard. There's, you know, standards around complexion and hair texture and the size of someone's nose and the size of someone's lips or butt, you know, and that these things are cruel and they don't reflect the world that we actually live in. And I'm going to, you know, raise you to be above that. And I seek to be above that. I don't always, you know, sometimes I fall short. Sometimes I criticize my body. Sometimes I don't love it. Sometimes I don't feel good. Sometimes the stuff I hear gets to me. And that's fine because I'm human. But I want, you know, your goal is to try and to be as at peace as you can possibly be. But I'm also going to make you aware of the noise that's going to attack your self-esteem, so it doesn't surprise you, you know, so that our house is not a utopia where, you know, big is beautiful and everything is fine. And then we go outside and I'm just shocked to learn that people feel differently. But I think that ultimately what seems to be missing is the celebration, as opposed to like, oh, it's fine, I'm fat. Like I think that you have to make living in a body, living in your own body and loving it no matter what, aspirational, not simply prescriptive. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Yeah, Danielle, I think that's great. And I, like you, find this so difficult to talk about because I know very few women, and I suspect also very few men, who have not dealt with this body issue. And so, like, we all have notions of our body. I think particularly in America, like, nobody's body is ever good enough. And that message is sent to us over and over again. And so no matter how, like, unless you are making a conscious effort to be like, this is the body that I have, and this is the body that I get to carry around on this wonderful planet, I better learn to love it. That having these conversations with your children like are just filled with all of that stuff that you've been carrying and have to kind of get rid of. And I find that incredibly difficult. And I read this and so much felt like it is more about this mom than about this child, because you can say all these things to kids, but so often they do what they see us do and not necessarily what we say to them. And maybe this is a case, like so much of what you talked about, I think is what needs to happen. Like, let's be celebrating this, surrounding yourself with media, with books, with things like that, that are celebrating all different kinds of body types, and specifically celebrating body types that are not like skinny, because we get plenty of that. But how do we celebrate like more realistic body types? There are some like wonderful books. There's a book called Her Body Can. It's a picture book. And it's kind of about this like bigger girl doing all these amazing things, like that her body can do all this stuff. And we have that in our library. And I think it's a fun one to like bring out and read just as a regular book. We talked about that so much when we were talking about, you know, race early on, about having those books, even if that is not the situation that you're facing. And I think this is another issue, that even if your family happens to not have these issues, if we want to be in a place where all body types are celebrated, that means that we all have to do the work on body image and making sure that we are not calling ourselves fat or someone else fat. And I kind of took the word where she says, like, well, you can call me fat, or we can use that word, but let's not use that. And kind of said, like, well, do we, if that's something that you love and celebrate, I guess that's fine. But I also just feel like it is a word that has so much with it that if you can just avoid using it, even about yourself, like to say, like, you are not worthy of that. Like, you might feel like I need to eat healthier, or I need to like be better about my physical activity, right? Or even like you wanted to go on this zip line. I feel like a better way to phrase that to your child would be like, well, I'm really not comfortable going on that. Because that's the honesty. Like, you are not comfortable because you think you're too big, right? Or because you're not sure of the weight limit. But maybe that doesn't need to be this barrier to things. And Jamila, you sort of talked about that. Like, you've now presented this to your daughter as like, this is a barrier to doing these things. And we don't know that it's a barrier to doing these things, right? And it's certainly there. Even if this zip line had some kind of weight limit, like, there are other zip lines, other places, if that's something you really wanted to do. So I think just saying, like, I'm not comfortable doing this, or this isn't really a place where adults are playing, like, there are all these other ways to reframe it for yourself so that your child sees you loving your body, or at the very least, not hating on your body, or not saying, I can't do these things because of my body. I just think that even if it's a like fake it till you make it situation for you personally, if you can start editing that when it comes out. And I loved, Mila, that you talked about like pointing out other bodies and pointing out that it's like, it's okay to describe people as like, well, this person is bigger than you and I are, but, you know, bodies come in all shapes and sizes. Like, it is, there's nothing inherently wrong with the different shape of bodies. The problem is, like, I know the Little Mermaid is used a lot, like the villain, it was portrayed as fat, and the, you know, heroine is this skinny little mermaid with no waist. Like, we are, when you start to look at that, you can see that even if you're not assigning negativity to the word fat, like books in your house are, and things that your child is seeing in the media are, and certainly there are plenty of people out there who are also doing it as well. So I just think if you can be kinder to yourself, and I think the big thing is sort of saying it in terms of like, if you're worried about her, one of the concerns in the letter was that you're worried about her going out and talking about other people's bodies. And I guess we just always tell the kids, like, one of the rules in our house is that we treat other people with respect, and that is non-negotiable. I expect respect. That doesn't mean not standing up for yourself. That doesn't mean, there are a lot of things that doesn't mean, but I expect you to approach everybody with respect. And I think with that kind of umbrella, you can couch a lot of these conversations and just say, like, well, is calling out their body type, is that respectful? And is that something that needed to happen? Like, there's plenty of reasons you need to describe someone, but are you doing that in a respectful way and in a way that conveys the information that you need? I also just want to say to our letter writer, like, it's never too late. Like, you haven't messed up anything. We just get so many letters. We're like, have I totally screwed this up? I always just want to be like, no, you can wake up tomorrow and do something different. And just decide, like, today's the day that I'm going to try to love my body and try to say something positive in front of my daughter about my own body. Like, you're probably saying lots of healthy things to her, but are you also looking in the mirror and saying, like, I'm so thankful for this body that let me take my child to the playground. And I'm so thankful for this body that lets me do all these things that I get to do, because this is the body that you have. And you can certainly try to make it healthier, right? To, like, eat better, not to be skinny, but eat better because you want your body to feel better. I think those are sort of the way the conversation should be couched or had. Like, am I making good choices for my body on the whole? I don't know.
Yeah, quickly, I'll just add, like, when you see, like the example Elizabeth pointed out in The Little Mermaid, that Ursula is this heavyset villain, right? And that's something that we've seen. And she's also one of the darker characters. You know, we often see bad people depicted as, you know, large, especially women, and dark. And that, like, pointing that out in real time. So that's not saying that The Little Mermaid has to be canceled forever in your house and that you're not watching it anymore. But if this is a movie that your child loves, that's a great time to show, like, an example of something that, and it may change her relationship to some of the content she consumes, and that's not a bad thing. It's not a fun thing. It's something I do constantly with my daughter. You know, we were watching a sitcom last night, a show called 101 from the late 90s, early 2000s on UPN that my daughter loves. I see our producer Jasmine nodding. Not a show that I was super into when it came on, but I've come to appreciate it through my daughter. But, you know, it bothered me that so often heavy set characters, particularly women, you know, and a male lead are the butt of jokes, you know, like either there's short jokes, there's fat jokes, like, and the lead characters is very good looking, tall guy who dates these, you know, pretty hot, you know, traditionally attractive women. And I pointed out to my daughter, it was this woman who was really, you know, he messed with and broke her heart and she'd put on all this weight and he's making these jokes about it, despite the fact that, like, it's his heartbreak that, you know, changed her life around or whatever and made her body undesirable to him. And she's so desperate and she's constantly eating. And it's this joke. And I couldn't let my daughter just enjoy that and laugh at it. And I was like, one, black women catch hell on this show sometimes. And two, like, why is the heaviest girl in the group got to be the thirstiest? Like, why is she so dumpy? You know, like, it's so beautiful actress playing her, right? She's a pretty woman. She looks like women, you know, like, you know, does this seem okay? And it takes them out of the fun of just watching a TV show or a movie with mom and dad sometimes, but it's important that they hear it.
Especially because that becomes the dialogue in their head. Like, I feel the same way. Like, why does this person being heavy set, does this person being darker, does this person being this have anything to do with the cruel thing that they have done or with the, you know, way that they are being treated? I think those are important things to put into their heads, and watching TV and watching things and calling that out is such a good way to do that, so that when you're encountering people in the real world, my hope is that those are the things that are coming into their head, right? Like, that those snap judgments that you make, that you have that other voice saying, like, well, why do I think that? Like, why am I automatically assuming that about this person? And is this physical characteristic that I see, does that have anything to do with the judgment that I'm passing? So I think that's great. I mean, yeah, once you sort of are cued into it, it's like, gosh, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's literally everywhere.
Can't we be more creative? Come up with some other. So there's plenty of things people can do to create drama and to get jokes.
Absolutely. And you know, when those jokes take up a significant percentage of the humor in a show or a movie, then maybe you need to not be watching it, right? Like, there's also times where you have to make a decision and say, like, you know, is this offensive body, you know, is this body shaming bigger than what value may be gleaned from us watching this movie? You know, like, there should be consequences for filmmakers and storytellers for continuing to lay on those lazy stereotypes. And it's one thing to be watching The Little Mermaid from 1990, you know, and to see those things. And another thing to watch a new show that debuted last week, now that we've had this dialogue publicly for many years in a way that, you know, folks weren't having it in 1990. And to set some expectations for that and to choose content based on having healthy representations of diverse body types and people being treated well without regard to how they look.
Okay, good luck, listener. We hope that we gave you some things to think about and that you are able to be kinder to yourself, too. We just want you to know that we are here cheering for you and for your daughter. So please let us know how it goes. If you have a question for us, email us at momanddad@slate.com or just post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, on to our second listener question. It's once again being read by the wonderful Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad are fighting. My three-year-old, who has never taken to any sort of comfort object despite having 70,000 blankets, stuffies, etc., has, as of today, developed a deep emotional attachment to a kabocha squash. She was horrified by the idea that I intended to cook it for dinner. It had to accompany us to the park, hang out with us in our fort, sit at the table for lunch. What the fuck do I do about this? Should I spirit it away tonight or just hope that the weird fixation resolves itself before the squash starts to ooze and decay? And why are children like this? Thanks, squash parent.
This was posted on our Facebook group, and I just, adore this child. Like, I already am like, ooh, a budding squash lover like myself. And I do want to point out that this is actually, some of our Facebook listeners knew this too, but there's like a book that is exactly this called, oh gosh, what is the name of it? Oh yes, there's a book called Sophie Squash by Pat Zietlow that is about a girl who falls in love with a squash. So at the very least, know that this is not abnormal. Like, there are other people out there, or at least some author imagined that this could happen to you. But Jamila, what would you do if, did Naima ever take to something weird?
She didn't. We didn't have, like, I can't remember what my object was, but I had a binky sort of situation at some point. I don't know if it was actually a blanket, but there was a thing that I was attached to. Naima didn't. You know, there was, like, maybe a favorite doll. You know, there are moments where it's like, I want to bring this doll most places, but she never, like, fixated on anything. Did any of your kids have, like, a thing?
Yeah, I mean, mine all have had really kind of, like, normal things. Henry had like a little monkey that he carried around. Oliver is that dog that is mm-hmm. in the picture from the doctor's office. But I mean, he still takes that thing everywhere. Like, it is just his comfort object. And I think honestly, Teddy took me as his comfort object. Like, he just is obsessed with being with me. I think because he was the third and I, like, you know, anytime he was crying little, I just like strapped him on in the baby carrier. So even now it's like he just needs to like feel me. He'll take a piece of my clothing or something, which is weird. But we never had something that was going to rot.
Yeah, that's the problem. This would be so sweet if it weren't going to rot. I don't know. And like, because this is not something that's easily duplicated. Like, you can't go out and.
Like, well, yeah, like they could keep replacing
it. Can maybe keep replacing it, but like, this is not a squash I'm familiar with. So I'm imagining that this is not something that you can just like, can you get this once a week at the farmer's market? Is that expensive?
Yeah, does it? I think it has seasons. Like, I imagine we are in kombucha squash
probably
season.
Probably kombucha squash season. And also, there's no, it's not like it's a tomato or something where it's like, I could get you a stuffed tomato and hopefully, like, yeah, you can transfer over that love.
You could probably go on Etsy. Go on Etsy and get a stuffed squash of some kind. I was thinking that maybe in a few days it'll just go away. Like, if they'd never taken to something before, maybe this is just, like, a new... So maybe you get away easy. And they are just going to
just let it go. Maybe you could, like, get in an outfit and, like, a carrier. And then, like, when it starts to smell bad, just be like, oh, how about a baby doll? And just, like, put a doll.
Swash it out. So I was thinking something we did when we moved from Colorado. And it was kind of the first move that Henry was old enough to remember is we went to Build-A-Bear. But this concept would go with anything and had all his friends, like, write little notes, and then we stuffed them in the bear and, you know, sewed it up. But I was thinking, like, you could take a seed or two and say, okay, we're going to put them in this bear. You don't actually have to put them in there, but, you know, and, like, you know, sew it back up. But then in the book, they plant the squash seeds. And so I was thinking that would be fun. Like, you could tell your child that this thing is going to eventually rot, because that is going to happen. But it has these seeds, and you could grow, like, a whole arsenal of kombucha squash. And if you have any problems with that, you can go back to the episode where I describe how you can pollinate your own squash. And you it's a twofer, because you will also be teaching sex ed. So
that is true. I forgot about that. You did teach your kids how babies were born through pollinating squash.
Yes, through pollinating squash. So, you know, not all bad. I also, there's a book called Pumpkin Jack by Will Hubble, and it's about a rotting pumpkin. And I think that might be a good, if your child does not quite comprehend what rotting is going to look like, this is a wonderful book that sort of takes this pumpkin that these kids loved and you watch it rot. It's illustrated. But I think when you tell a kid sometimes, like, this is going to rot or this is going to do that, like, they don't, I don't know that they can comprehend the disgusting mess
until they see
that
it
is going to result until they see it.
And the sight and smell could be traumatic. What you don't want is there to be a forever distaste for squash because you let this go on a day or two longer than you should have. So when, if this does continue into the point of decay, like, you want to stop right before, you know, when it starts to go soft, you need to stop this train. And if you're going to attempt to grow squash, which is a noble endeavor, I think I would be lying if I told you I felt up to it. But also living in an apartment might be easier if you have a garden or something. And I also kill houseplants. So maybe there is a way to squash, you know, plant a squash in an apartment. I just wouldn't be the person to ask. So don't let me in my apartment living discourage you, because you probably can totally do it. Just ensure that you actually, you know, you can never guarantee that something's going to grow from a seed, of course, even with the best practices. But take the time to find out what goes into growing the squash, and is it possible in the conditions under which you would have to
do it. Yeah, that's definitely true.
You don't want there to be any disappointment. You don't want this kid, you know, looking every day for a squash budding that's not going to be coming. You could also maybe, I love the idea of creating some sort of pouch or something that either has the seeds in it for real, you know, if you can come up with something smell proof, or something that, you know, has the seeds in it, quote unquote. There's also maybe cooking the seeds or toasting them, like, you know, like you would pumpkin seeds or sunflower seeds or something. And as long as your little one doesn't study their own poop very closely, you could maybe say that if you eat the seedling, it'll be with you forever.
Ooh, I like that. And technically, you're not wrong, because, you know, you're using those nutritional atoms and things.
Absolutely. It's passed through you. It's done its job. And ultimately, no matter what, which Dan would certainly remind us if he were here, it's going to rot. You're the adult. Do not allow your child to carry around a soft, mushy, stinky thing, or to keep one in their room. You do have to explain that vegetables rot. You could probably, that's probably the easiest thing, is to start with first, vegetables rot. Squash is rot. This will not last. You know, this cannot live forever. This is food. There's a reason why the food that we have in the refrigerator now is not, for the most part, the food that we had in the refrigerator 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And that's the refrigerator. So imagine if we're living outside of the fridge. So it's a good time to also talk about the life cycle of food.
And really the life cycle.
The life cycle, right. If you really want to get grim, you could talk about you too are a squash, just slowly rotting.
I mean, we're just going to roll it all up into one big life lesson.
Yes. All at once.
Well, my only disappointment from this Facebook post is that it included no pictures.
We want pictures, please. I would like, especially if you...
Even if you don't want them shared, just send them to us. We want to see your sweet little one with her kombucha squash. There was some debate. Jasmine, our producer, was talking if it is a vegetable or a fruit. She, you know, because she is the diligent producer that she has, Googled it and said it was a fruit.
Okay.
But I was under actually the impression that squashes were vegetables, which is wrong.
I think that's because they're not sweet. I wonder if that's why we just assumed they were vegetables. I also went through this with Naima not too long ago because she asked about, you know, what a pumpkin was. And I was like, well, clearly that's a vegetable. If I can't bite into it and just eat it, it feels like a vegetable.
You should go, dear listener, go go Google whether you're dealing with
learn
a fruit
all
or a
types
vegetable.
Of stuff about this new member of your family, and please come back to us and share.
Yes, well, we are so thankful for your question. Please send us a photo. We want a photo. And let us know what you did. Not only are we wondering, I think all of the Facebook responders who commented that this post had just made their day, they also want to know what did you end up doing, as the squash is already rotting as we tackle this question now. If you have a question, and apparently no question is too strange, too small, or too big, send in your question or conundrum to momanddad@slate.com. All right, well, we are going to move on to the section of the podcast where we recommend things we like. So, Jamila, what do you have for us?
So, my recommendation, I typically try to come up with things that are affordable, if not free. Well, nothing's more affordable than free, but low-cost stuff. This one's a little bit pricier than usual, so I apologize in advance. This is a big splurge for somebody who has been a good girl or boy or gender non-conforming person this year and deserves it. I realize that a number of the things that I do, like, if a man did them, they would be considered, like, midlife crisis stuff. And like if I looked at the past 2 years of like tattoos, dalliances with guys, irresponsible purchases, they might kind of like, I don't know, I feel like I'm kind of the like stereotypical like cool dad on some 90s sitcom, like going through it, like I'm Uncle Jesse or something. But in that vein, I got my car wrapped last week. So I've mentioned, now y'all are the only internet people, I've never posted a picture of my car, but I've only mentioned it on this podcast. So if anybody ever does me harm and my car is connected to it, just know, came from Mom and Dad Are Fighting. I drive a 2014 Mustang convertible. So I don't have a brand new nor fancy car, but it's a convertible. So there's an inherent coolness to it. And that's also like the last year of the old body. So like I do not have like the coolest convertible on the road by far. It's not old enough to be super cool or new enough to be the coolest, right? It's like not old enough to be the coolest nor new enough to be the coolest.
Middle.
Right in the middle, but it's fine because it's convertible. And I'm like, does your car's top come off? Probably not. Thus, I went. So it was gray, which was not my favorite color, but it was, you know, I had found a decent one and it was in my price range and I got it. And I'd play with the idea of getting it painted or wrapped and for some months. And then finally, I had a little money saved up and it's like college fun or like make my car like this kind of cool gold green color where like I sort of look like some sort of cool, I don't know, character from a 70s movie. And it was phenomenal. And it's, my car has been such a source of entertainment during the pandemic because there's really nothing that I can do besides going to Target or Home Goods. She's probably going to be taken away from us very soon. Or just taking long drives, playing loud rap music. And so now I've got this cool colored car and I love it. So look into car wrapping. It is less expensive in most cases than getting your car painted or repainted. And in many instances, as long as there's been no repainting to your car, which apparently had happened, which I didn't know before I bought mine, that there had been some repaint job done on the hood, you can oftentimes remove the wrap and go back to the original color. If you've got a car that you plan on having for a while, you can wrap it again in a couple of years. It's so much fun. Like, it's like getting a new car, but not having to pay for a new car. So look into car wrapping. And if you're really talented, it might be something you could do yourself at home. You can buy the wraps online. I certainly wouldn't recommend it. I would go to a professional. I think it's a bit trickier than wallpaper, but it has been the joy of my life to have a green car. Like, nobody has a green car, and I have a green car.
Are you just so happy every time you go to get in it now?
I am. Every time I get into it, I'm like, yes. The only thing that's missing, I need a new top. Like, I have the soft top or whatever. And so, like, I have the old kind of grayish sailcloth soft top, and it's a little beat up. So I'm going to get a new one. And when I get that, I'm like, you cannot tell me anything at all.
There you go. I love that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, mine is going to be boring, but...
I also can't afford, like, Christmas is canceled. Like, I can't afford anything for the next 2 years. But
no, if you deserve anything in 2020, it's to make, like, your one, you know, your purchase be what you wanted it to be.
It's my one thing.
The one thing. That's the thing you did for yourself. I love this. I love that now it is like your perfect color. I know the top's not perfect, but you're getting there. But
thank you.
I love this. Well, I am recommending, in honor of like upcoming holidays and also perhaps more school closures and kids being home, these fun schooling journals from Thinking Tree Books. They come in like a variety of themes, and generally they are sort of like the kind of workbook that your kid is happy to sit down and do, but they're practicing some school skills. And what I love about it is that there's so many that you can choose from, so you can really find something that your kids like. We have a space and nature one right now, but they have like cooking and horses and unicorns and all this stuff. But the workbooks kind of trick your kids into honing some school skills. And so my six-year-old does this space book. And this is literally like what we bring on, like if we were going to drive to camping or when we're at camping or even here when they want to do quiet time, maybe they don't want to read. Like, this is a book that they're happy to pick up and do. But it'll say, like, find 20 words that have seven letters and write them down on this sheet of paper. And then they go around, like, asking, you know, calling grandma and asking for a word or looking in books for words, essentially like creating their own little spelling list that they've learned about, which I love. And it has those like color, you know, do the math and color blocks in it, but in the theme that you've chosen. It has them like designing for the space one, designing your own rocket, and then write, you know, an area to like write a little story about it or calculate its weight. Like, all of these things that my kids really enjoy doing, and I can feel kind of like, ooh, pat on the back, you're doing some schoolwork. But especially as we get into these breaks, and if some of them, I know some schools are like not going back after Thanksgiving, things like that, and you're thinking like, how am I going to keep my kids occupied? I mean, this won't be a like all afternoon thing, but it is certainly something that can buy you an hour here and there while you have the kids home. So again, those are fun schooling journals from Thinking Tree Books, and they are available on Amazon. And that's it for our show. One more time, if you have a question, email us at momanddad@slate.com or post it to the Slate Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting. Also, if you haven't already, subscribe on your personal podcast app of choice. It helps us out and makes sure that you won't miss an episode. And while you're there, write a review. It helps people find the show. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced this week by Jasmine Ellis. For Jamila Lemieux, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp.